I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had the chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win! Cowabunga!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the Terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Ha-ha! Righteous! Righteous!
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
If the Maryland basketball team had an official poker game, it would be called Two Studs because they needed both of their All-American level players to turn a 7-point deficit into a 7-point win at Michigan State on Saturday night, keeping them alone at the top of the Big Ten standings as we get towards the end of the season and tourney time beckons. To discuss it all, you are listening to IMS Radio. Today we have with us the publisher of InsideMarylandSports.com, Jeff Ehrman, football and football recruiting reporter Med Gafir, and as always, I'm your host, Paul Douglas. Jeff, the Terps have not had an easy time on the road in the Big Ten. Frankly, nobody has. At Indiana, at Illinois, at Michigan State, at all times in second halves in those games. You're probably, your typical, I think, pessimistic kind of, we've seen this before, Maryland fan, probably would have expected them to not come back from those deficits, to not come back and win those games, and yet they won all three. It's starting to feel a little bit different in College Park this time.
I think it's starting to feel a lot different. I mean, those are typically three games, even aside, even without knowing about the deficits, just three games in general where you think, all right, we'll probably win one of those. Two would be great. You don't even think about the possibility of winning three, especially because Illinois and Michigan State, you know, Illinois has been really good and Michigan State's almost impossible to beat at home. And Michigan State was in a desperate mode, big game night, you know, college game day, 2000 championship team back. I mean, that's just the kind of game they don't really lose there. So it feels a lot different. This team, I think there's empirical evidence now that this team is different. To win those three road games in a row, and Indiana is not very good. I've been beating that drum since the beginning of the year, but still, you know, it's a tough place.
That's a place that Maryland's never won in the Big Ten.
Exactly.
Right?
They'd never won there. So this team, there's no question this team's different. Does that guarantee any sort of postseason success in the fluky format of college basketball? No, but this team is definitely different from probably any, I would say, that we've seen under Turgeon.
No, I think that's right in a lot of ways. Not only the fact, look, what have we always asked from Mark Turgeon to do? It's to do something he hasn't done before. Winning big pressure games and riding a winning streak into mid-February is something he's not done before here, and he deserves credit for that. I will absolutely give you all of that up front. I think the difference to me is not only, you know, before, if you want to talk about some of those 2014 teams, 2015, you had stars, you had a Mello Trimble. And then you had guys that were, you know, maybe not quite All-American level, but certainly, you know, all-conference consideration type guys. It feels like at this point you've got Cowan and you've got Sticks playing as well together as any duo that I can remember at Maryland in quite some time, possibly back to a Dixon-Lonnie Baxter type situation where legitimately both of them could be an All-American consideration.
Yeah, definitely. Is the only comparison really is Mello and Des Wells, but they weren't as good combined as these two. They're both, I mean, they both should be first team all Big Ten choices. That would have sounded unlikely, you know, a month or so ago. You'd figure there was only room for one. And then when Sticks started his tear, you figured he was going to be the one. But now Cowan he's got to be playing his way well into that conversation, if not onto the team at this point. So, you know, there's no secret. And that's what I said in the preseason. Everybody was saying, oh, well, if Aaron Wiggins takes the next step, or if the Twins can do this or that. And I felt like, no, it's going to be whether Anthony Cowens is this guy that people are hyping him up to be as a top, 10 player in college basketball, which, he hadn't been before he was good. But I figured that was a difference. And that, along with Sticks becoming an All-American caliber player, obviously you can't minimize that. But Cowan has turned into that guy, especially late in games. I saw something. He's shooting like 10 of 16 from three in the final 2 minutes of games or something like that. He legitimately stole this game, and he stole the Illinois game, down the stretch, both of those. So you could argue that as good as Sticks has been, Cowan is probably their MVP.
I'm telling you, it's Gravis Vasquez all over again. I mean, if you look at Cowan's career, come in as a freshman, make an impact, not a starter, but a guy that can play well, play a lot. Sophomore and junior years, a lot of good, but a lot of bad to kind of go with it. You'd have the 30-point game followed by the 7.6 turnover stinker type game. But senior years, both of them come on and they literally at times are able to pick the team up on their back and carry them. And you might see similar results here. Gravis's team, tied for the ACC regular season championship and was a prayer from Michigan State away from getting to a Sweet 16 and beyond. You could envision an even potentially better result with this Cowan team because Gravis didn't have a star like Sticks to go with him.
Yeah, you really can. I mean, especially with the field being so wide open in the NCAA tournament this year, it's just, with those two guys, it's amazing how well this team's done considering you have no bench, you're not a very good three-point shooting, and you're an average offensive team. I think they're like ninth or tenth in the Big Ten in field goal percentage, somewhere around there, and points per game, but they're so good defensively, and those two guys have been so good that that's carried them, just those combination of factors.
Yeah, they clearly ride their defense, and that's the one thing. Basically all Turgeon teams play good defense. This team has really turned into a good defensive team, especially after the new year. And I think when you look back, it's really been that after that kind of Christmas break, post-Christmas break, where they lost a couple games on the road, didn't look good, barely beat Illinois to start the conference season. You had that transition from where Cowan had always been, has been pretty consistently good over a senior year. He's just been better the last couple weeks. Sticks really turned the corner, I think, over Christmas break and has taken that sophomore leap that we hoped he would. But it's really been on the defensive end too. Sticks as a rebounder and as a rim protector has just been next level. And that kind of falls into the fact that you can count on a guy like Darryl Morsell or Wiggins, who's played excellent defense recently, to be able to lock down opposing guards or whoever their leading scorer is, the way that they lock down Winston for the most part. And, you've just got a team that looks built to make a run, which, I mean, the components have been there the whole time, but we haven't seen anybody playing to the level that we felt like they needed to play to, but you're starting to see it now.
They really are. It's just a shame you can't trade a future draft pick for like one more bench guy. That's the big concern once you get into March, playing multiple games in multiple day, the format of everything. And if one guy gets into foul trouble, it's going to be scary. But there's really not a candidate. You keep saying, oh, maybe one of these guys will. I don't think there is a candidate off the bench to help them. He's just going to have to go seven deep and give 20 minutes combined to like two or three other guys, in the postseason. But outside of that, they clearly all the pieces are there. The past eight games, they've been scoring consistently more points. I mean, they've pretty much been putting up, outside of the Michigan State game, 70 points or more every game, where before that they'd scored more than like 72, I think it is, once in the previous 15 games, or I don't know what it was, but they've been better offensively. Ayala's starting to shoot it a little bit better. He got that hot start against Michigan State, and then you know, kind of went cold again and got a little out of control with it. But
at least he went cold.
Yeah, he went cold. He went cold and he took some bad shots. But at least he's got the capability now to help you. That 7-point run he had was pretty impressive. You know, he just to have the confidence to do it. He didn't have the confidence to even, you know, attempt that a week earlier. So far, so good. The thing about that win, too, is, you know, that was their toughest remaining game. I think they had an 80% chance, right around 80% chance of losing that game statistically. So now you know, and Penn State obviously had the easy win over Northwestern earlier in the day. So it would have been a tie for first place. And Penn State, I think, has a slightly easier schedule left. So that's the biggest reason why it's huge, because now the rest of the schedule, you know, at Rutgers is tough. They still haven't lost at home. They're the only other Big Ten team that hasn't lost at home. And obviously Michigan State at home, but you're not losing any games at home. You've already beaten them on the road. So that should be a win. So, you know, now you've really put yourself in pole position with 6 games left.
Yeah, I think you hit on the main issue. If you want to have one thing to really worry about, and that's what we do on the show, it's the depth. Beginning of the season, you saw Turgeon go 8, 9, 10 deep at times, spreading things out, running a little bit more, being able to be a little bit more creative. It's fairly clear that a guy like Lindo and Tamayich, like they're just not playable at this point. At this point in the season, with these high pressure matchups against good bigs, it's just, you can't do it. Mariol is always been a wild card. You know, this is the point where it really kills you not having the Mitchell twins, just as somebody who could go in there and give you, you know, 8 minutes of competent big man play so that you can let Sticks get a rest. I mean, the guard situation, yeah, you know, Sorrell Smith is not totally knocked anyone's socks off, but he's not unplayable. There are ways that you can get Cowan a blow. But the big man problem, I mean, it just smells like a thing. If you get a bad matchup in the tournament and Sticks gets 2 fouls with 10 minutes in the first half, there could be trouble. And that's definitely something that worries you. And practically, I mean, as much as we've talked about this team needing to run, you really just can't do it that much. You can't press, you can't trap, you can't run that much, certainly not at the secondary break or anything like that when you're only playing 6 or 7 guys.
No, they'll still run in spots. You know, they still run at times more than in the past, I think. I haven't looked at their pace numbers anytime recently, but yeah, you're right. That's it. The Mitchell twins not panning out is pretty much what that's all about. You know, if those guys had stuck around, they'd even been serviceable, then it's a whole different picture. You've got guys who can give you at least combined 15 minutes a game in the front court. And then the other thing, obviously, is Ricky Lindo just hasn't progressed at all. It's hard to say what's happened with him, but he's taken a step backward. He tried, you know, each time Turgeon keeps trying to give him another shot, and it just doesn't seem to be working out. It didn't work out at Michigan State. He came in, gave up a couple quick buckets to Xavier Tillman immediately, had a bad foul. So you just don't have any sort of backup big man at all who can come in and help you. And then, like we've talked about with Mariol, he doesn't seem like he's going to give you anything this year.
Yeah, I guess the hope there was that you could at least get 5 fouls and 8 to 10 minutes of some decent rim protection and maybe an offensive rebound or two, but I'm just not sure that's going to work out, given his shape and given the fact that he hasn't played consistently in so long. It's a shame, because I mean, just that little bit could mean a lot for this team in a game by game basis when it's, you know, win or go home.
He's just not physically strong enough. Aside from looking lost at times on offense, he's gotten the ball a few times down low and couldn't even get it to the rim at his height just because of lack of strength or bounce or whatever it is, which is understandable, obviously. So, you know, Dante Scott's been pretty good filling in that role. Once Wiggins went to the bench, though, he plays like a veteran. He's still somewhat limited offensively, but he's just one of those guys who, cliche as it is, just makes those winning plays constantly. I mean, he's got a nose for the ball. Some guys are just born without that quarter second of hesitation without, you know, before you go after a ball. And he's one of those guys. So he was pretty good also against Michigan State. Offensively, he wasn't great, but made some plays. And so that's been huge for them, because if he wasn't who he's been, they'd be in, you know, that would be in even less depth. But, you know, Sorrell Smith, I don't think he even got off the bench at Michigan State.
Just a couple minutes, I think. It wasn't much.
Yeah, it's funny. That's what we talked about this year, deepest team ever. And it's going to be his least deep team ever, but still his best.
Well, look, you know, Coach K proudly plays six or seven guys every year and has some decent results to back that up, like it or not. So it's certainly not not undoable.
Except his guys are all five-star freshmen.
That's helpful. That's helpful. So for me, Dante Scott's a good story because it looked like he hit a bit of a freshman wall a couple weeks ago, and it feels like he's starting to pull out of that. You've got guys like Morcell. Morcell only scored 1 point but had six assists and also basically shut down Cassius Winston for the most part. You know, his defensive ability as a defensive stopper is just something that, again, you're looking for these pieces that a potential championship team would need. You're starting to see some of these things emerge. I think the other thing that needs to happen is not only, you know, Ayala's 3-point shot's going to be whatever it is, but him being able to drive and dish is super important to this team because, you know, him and Cowan are basically the two guys that are capable of getting on the inside and causing havoc, especially when, even when they're sitting back and kind of allowing Maryland to shoot threes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with Wiggins, he just looks so close to putting it all together. Like, it's not quite there yet, but boy, there are games when he looks like the type of guy where, like, okay, that's the kind of third scorer that can get you to a Final Four.
Yeah, he had a couple of those moments against Michigan State, the behind the back dribble to lane and layup, and then he had another baseline jumper that was really pretty. So he's still a year away from doing those things consistently. But you feel like next year he could easily become that 15-point-per-game guy. He's showing those signs. But, yeah, he's definitely a candidate to be that, you know, that wild card guy in the tournament who busts out in one of the games and kind of saves them. And, you know, otherwise, nobody scores. It's pretty much – well, no, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that. Morcell had a couple back-to-back really good games, 18 and 16, so he can do it at times. So, yeah, you have everybody – who fills in one of those roles that you need, you know, and everything's going well for the eight in a row. I don't think anybody could have ever predicted anything. I can't imagine what the statistical odds of 8-1, eight wins in a row were. It had to be 1,000,000 to 1. And they just look like
a team great.
That's just not capable of losing right now. Like I absolutely wouldn't be surprised if they win these next six games.
It's an absurd proposition when you think about where we were a month and a half ago, but it no longer is. I mean, college basketball does not have really elite dominant teams all over the place. And as good as the Big Ten is, I think Maryland's pretty clearly the class of it at this point. And it's not just having a team that's winning back, you know, winning regular season games. You know, it's the thing. I play softball a lot, right? So one of my softball teams, every year we go and we dominate the regular season because we're deep. We've got a lot of good players, but we don't have a lot of guys who are like really elite type guys. So we get into the tournament and we almost always lose in the semifinals, every once in a while in the finals, but we haven't won in a decade. So it doesn't match up. Why are we so good in the regular season, but not so good in the tournaments? Because in a one game situation, it's the stars, man. It's stars who show up, and you know, when somebody else is having an off day, your stars are there to bail you out. And that's really what happened against Michigan State. The offense was garbage for like a solid 20 minutes in the middle of that game. I mean, Maryland just had no idea what they were doing. They barely, I don't think the ball would get within the 3-point range, with like be it close within the 3-point line towards the basket. They would just pass it around the outside. Somebody would freak out and hoist up a 3-point shot with 2 seconds left on the clock. It was really bad. But then, luckily for them, they've got Sticks and Cowan. And what do you know? That solves the problem most of the time.
Yeah, they, you know, they rely a lot on 3-pointers. So when you do that and you go cold, that's what tends to happen along with the offense, which we've discussed many times, is not the most motion heavy offense. They missed 10 threes in a row before those four threes, the one by six and the three by Cowan. They had missed their other 10 in the second half, which is pretty incredible. I think Izzo pointed out in the post game that they scored 14 points in the final 3 minutes and had scored like 16 in the previous 17 minutes or something like that. So the offense was we've seen those stretches many times, and especially like on the road at Michigan State. Just got to hope those don't happen in the postseason, and hope the Stars continue to carry you.
Yeah, it's funny how much Maryland relies on a three-point line. They would have been like, what, 5 for 21 before the end of the game, and they finished 9 for 25. That's the hitting four in a row at the end of the game to close out a game significantly helps your final percentage. I'm not sure whether that counts as the old, you know, aggression towards the mean, but Maryland will take it in that case.
Yeah, they rely on them a lot, and they're not that good. They were terrible at shooting them earlier this season.
Yeah, it's better. It's just not good.
Yeah, they were last in the conference. Now they are, I think, like maybe eighth or something like that. They're ninth in the conference right now, so still not great, 32%. But like you said, I mean, who else? Nobody else has two stars like that. I think in terms of the Big Ten, honestly, Penn State might be the next best team. I was all aboard the Illinois bandwagon, and they hit a wall, and now they lost Io DeSumo at least for a few games. So if he's healthy, they should be able to make some sort of run. But they've gone from first in the conference to now fighting for their tournament bid. Michigan State obviously is good, but not that good. And so it's really looking like, I don't know if we overrated the Big Ten. Clearly, you know, there's not an elite team outside of Maryland, but the depth is there. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm going off on a tangent, but it's going to be really interesting to see if maybe we watch what the conference does in the tournament and kind of take back how great of a conference they were. We'll see.
Yeah, I think we smelled most of the way that this was a good conference with a lot of good teams, but without any elite teams. I mean, I guess everybody kind of thought Michigan State was elite, but when you watch that team, not even just over the last couple of weeks, I mean, Winston and Tillman are excellent. And I think, you know, you talk about two stars, that's probably the closest any other Big Ten team has to a Six-Cowan combo. But the rest of the dudes, man, not good.
No.
Like, really not good. So I think that's their problem. Their two are great. Their other four or five in the rotation, just not good enough, which is strange for a Michigan State team.
Well, and Michigan and Ohio State were in the top five for a minute, so that was part of the hype. And neither one of them is very good, it turns out. So
yeah, all that's done is goose everybody's KenPom numbers.
Exactly. You know, they're both 7-7 in the conference. Then you got, you know, a few teams are just solid, like Wisconsin, and really good at home. But, you know, Iowa's starting to fade a little bit. They're still 9-6. Rutgers is actually really solid, but, you know, they don't score enough to scare anybody, I don't think, in the postseason. So I still think it's a good conference. I think we're going to end up maybe dialing it back a little bit, though.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Now, you're talking about the conference. Let's look at the end of the schedule here. You've got Northwestern at home on Tuesday night. You're at Ohio State, at Minnesota, then Michigan State at home, at Rutgers, and then you finish up with Michigan at home. I think that looks, if you're Maryland and you want to win this conference, I think 4-2 is the absolute minimum there. 5-1 probably does it. But those trips to Ohio State and Rutgers are not going to be easy. And certainly Michigan State at home is not going to be an easy one either.
You know, those two road trips could be tricky. Ohio State's going to be really desperate there. Obviously, Maryland will probably be a small favorite just because it's on the road. Rutgers will be tough. That's the toughest. I think that's the toughest remaining game on the schedule. So
the rack, man, you got to fear the rack.
It's like the new Cameron Indoor. So 4-2. You know, should at least get you a tie, you would think. But Penn State's got a pretty soft schedule. They got Illinois at home, which should be a win, at Indiana, which should be a win. Rutgers at home, at Iowa. At Iowa, that could be kind of tricky. Michigan State at home, at Northwestern. So theirs is you know, not a cakewalk, but they're not going to lose more than probably one, maybe two of those games. So Maryland, I would say 5-1, you know, clearly should wrap it up.
Yeah, 4-2 probably at least gets you a share, you'd think.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this week will be important. You gotta put the Nebraska home game is one that you gotta really gets you really scared about this Northwestern one. And Northwestern is just absolute trash this year, but so is Nebraska. So you worry about that a little bit coming off another big road win. That the guys might be feeling themselves a little bit. And as we know, when Maryland teams start feeling themselves, bad things happen. So let's hope they put Northwestern away pretty easily. And then at Ohio State is certainly no cakewalk. But who knows which Ohio State's going to show up, because they're all over the place.
Yeah, Maryland's handled them pretty well. They gave Maryland some problems early when the two would play in the Big Ten, just the first year or two. I think they actually played in the maybe one of those might have been the ACC Big Ten Challenge the year before Maryland.
Before they joined, right? And they got, yeah. Is that when they got stomped by like 30, or was that the next year?
Yeah. I think I was at that game. It was like Roddy Peters and that team, and they just got hammered. But they've owned Ohio State lately. That's going to be, again, a road desperation game. But the rest of them, and even Minnesota, you know, we remember a few years ago what happened when they went in there, and Minnesota was like 0-13 in Big Ten play. That was the 2014-2015 team. So, you know, you can never chalk up any road game as a win, but right now the way they're playing, I haven't looked to see if anybody else has as many road wins in the conference, but I can't believe anybody does at this point. Maybe Penn State. I'm not sure.
Pretty sure they're tied with four with someone else, either Michigan State or Penn State, and everybody else is two or three.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, they've been, again, one of these things we've consistently complained about is that Maryland has not showed up on the road, especially against ranked opponents and against good opponents. You know, whether Michigan State's ranked or not doesn't matter. I mean, that's a game that all the analytics will tell you that Maryland is supposed to lose. I think personally, I posted earlier in the week that it was a total house money game. I mean, everybody looks at this schedule this season and thinks, okay, at Michigan State, probably not going to chalk that one up, even under the best of circumstances. So nothing to complain about there. That's a big one, and one that'll certainly give you a little more confidence going in some of these other road venues that they've been able to keep themselves competitive against the good teams. You like to think they could win some games that they're supposed to against Minnesota or even a Rutgers, even though that's a tough place to play. So, all right, that is what basketball is looking at. Northwestern Tuesday, Ohio State on Sunday. Somewhat basketball related. All of you know one Scott Van Pelt, ESPN anchor, hero to many, including us. Dare I say, friend of the show. Been on the show multiple times, hopefully on the show again, if we don't piss him off too bad talking about this. So he had made some comments on Kevin Sheehan's radio show this week about Maryland fans. And I think that's particularly interesting considering the way that we have treated this season, especially given the slow start. I think we've been fairly critical. I don't think it's been unfair, but certainly critical. And this is something that Scott had said to Kevin Sheehan. Talking about fans that are not, I guess, not able to enjoy the current success because of their dislike or disapproval of Mark Turgeon. Quote, I hate those people. I hate you. Here's what I tell you. I hate you. I hate you because you're impossible. If being ranked in the top 10 and being first in the Big Ten with a potential lottery pick in Sticks and a four-year local player in Cowan, who's climbing the ranks of all-time Maryland scorers and winners, if this isn't enough for you, if you're still looking in the rearview to the past and complaining about that now, then you're hopeless. I am an emotional guy. I watch sports wearing basically all of my emotions on my sleeve. That is, I would argue, not the best way to watch sports if you are a person who also gets an hour a week to pontificate on a radio or podcast. But I'm not a giant fan of these comments, to be honest with you. I think it's a little bit of a straw man. Now, I can't speak for the Twitter trolls that people like Van Pelt have to deal with on a daily basis. I cannot even imagine the level of stupidity that comes across on his Twitter feed. But I think, at least speaking for us, or speaking for myself, certainly, I've been extremely critical of Turgeon, frankly, because of the things that he's been unable to do. He's been unable to have postseason success in any shape. He's been unable to keep a team that's looked really good in, say, December or January to make a run in February or March. I think I saw the other day that he is his teams are 14-14 in the month of February in the past 4 years. That's not great. I've never been a big fan of the fan policing. I just feel like people who are not necessarily sold on Turgeon have every right to not be sold on Turgeon. But it doesn't seem to me that, at least someone who is not sold on Turgeon like myself, it doesn't seem like I'm certainly able to enjoy the games. Ask me how much I enjoyed last night. I enjoyed that a lot. I basically sat on my laptop posting on Jeff's board for 6 hours. But I'm still not sure about Turgeon. Like, I feel like those can be two complete and separate things. And I feel like it's a bit of a straw man trying to say, like, well, if you can't enjoy, or if you don't approve of Turgeon, then you can't enjoy what's going on right now. I'm just not sure that's all that cool to me, man. I'm just emoting here.
But I think part of what he's trying to say is, you know, I think everyone, and he even said it, I think it's understandable to have some concerns about, you know, Turgeon in March. But, you know, his comment about, you know, this is still a top 10 team, lottery pick, and you have a 4-year senior who, and lottery pick and 4-year senior are both local guys. I mean, they're on an 8-game winning streak right now. I mean, I have a group chat with all my college buddies, and we were talking about the game last night, and with about 5 minutes left, you know, everyone just started turning the conversation into, you know, we blew this lead. Turgeon doesn't know how to coach. And it just becomes, the way I took it was, we can't take all of the criticisms and the ebbs and flows of the program and just put like a paint a broad brush and blame it all on Turgeon. I mean, I think that I think that you have to be able to enjoy this, and you know, you have to be optimistic. I mean, I think this is also the best year that, or the best team that's in February under Turgeon since he's been here, and that includes the year that Maryland beat Duke 2 times out of 3 in those 3 matchups. So I just took it as, you know, just kind of enjoy this ride. I mean, we can like I said, 8-game winning streak. They're first in the Big Ten right now. I think there's just some positives, and I think there's a lot of people that just want to harp on the negatives and just continue to harp on the negative. And it gets old and kind of redundant sometimes.
Yeah, no, I hear that to some degree. I just wonder if that's more of a critique of just like the internet. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, yeah.
It feels like a bit of a call out to your boys, you know, and I'm not sure. You know, I mean, look, I went to the Michigan State Board on Saturday night just to see what was going on there. It was a fucking riot. Like those people were ready to fire Izzo, like, because, you know, they're out of the top 25 for the first time in like 5 years. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm hurt. I love my guy. Literally, when his mouth opens, he starts talking about Maryland. I am listening and I am engaging and I am interested, because I'm not sure anybody has any larger perspective or better perspective on the program that Scott Van Pelt does. I'm a little hurt, man. I'm a little hurt. That's all. Judge me for it. It's fine. You know, to me, it's like, I'm loving this. I'm having a great year. I mean, look, we spent an hour, you know, after those 2 losses to Penn State and Seton Hall and at Iowa and at Wisconsin, and we talked about like how you might have to let the guy go because it looked like the season was going to fall apart. It didn't fall apart. It got great. And it's been the best year to this point, that, you know, even better than the 2014 team. It's probably as good as Graves's 2010 team under Gary. It's been a lot of fun. But if Turgeon goes and loses in the, you know, semifinals of the Big Ten and is out in the first weekend of the tournament, how am I supposed to feel about that?
Well, all right. My thing is, why do Maryland fans, and I guess, why do we value the Big Ten tournament? I mean, to me, I don't care.
if Maryland wins or loses first game, wins the Big Ten. Hell, I hope they lose in the Big Ten tournament. I don't want them to go into the NCAA tournament on a 7-8 game winning streak. Like, I think Maryland does need to lose one, maybe two more games. I do think this is a great team, and I think going through those losses are part of it. And if one of those comes in the second round against Minnesota or Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament, like, I'd be disappointed for 15 minutes, and I'd say, okay, like I would trade in a Sweet 16 run even over a Big Ten tournament title. Like, that, even when I was a kid and I would watch Maryland in the ACC tournament, like, I only really cared about Maryland in the ACC tournament when we were playing Duke or UNC, because I hated both of those schools, and all I wanted was to see Maryland beat Duke and UNC. But outside of that, I mean, if you're a bubble team, of course you want to win the Big Ten tournament, but, like, Maryland's fighting for a 1 or 2 seed right now, and I don't think the NCAA tournament committee really has, over the past couple of years, has truly put too much emphasis on those top seeds losing in conference tournament. So I don't think it has as much of an impact on tournament seeding. So to me, I don't care about the Big Ten tournament, to be blunt. I agree with you, Paul. I think if after this year, if they go into the first or second round of the NCAA tournament and they lose, I think Turgeon and the team deserves a lot of criticism, because I think to be able to achieve all of that and only to bow out so early and, you know, go back into the offseason of what could have been, I think that would be absolute worst nightmare for Turgeon.
Yeah, the conference title thing is so funny to me, because I completely agree with you. I mean, I used to feel like that all the time. And I don't know whether Maryland fans are just broken, like, because we had to suffer through these, you know, Greensboro Bojangles tournament nightmares year after year after year in the ACC, but everybody else seems to give a shit about the tournament. And for me, you know, I don't care that much about the Big Ten tournament. Sure, I'd be happy to, I'm happy to hang the Orlando Invitational banner, because you won something. It matters, right? You played other teams and you were the last team standing. That's good. And for me, part of my problem with Turgeon is just his inability to win in a single elimination tournament at the end of the season. And I guess if he was able to pull off winning a Big Ten tournament, that starts to satiate that hunger for at least, okay, we're hanging a banner this year. Like, that's not nothing. And it's Turgeon being able to do something that he hasn't done before in his 9 years at Maryland.
I'm with Ahmed, maybe to a smaller extent on the conference tournament thing. I think you do want to do well there, just because it establishes your pecking order a little bit in the conference, and it's fun to watch, and especially if you're going to the event or whatever else, and it helps your seating in NCAA. So it's something. But how many people remember, like, that's something I've been surprised about by people on the site for years, is how much they talk about how they want to, you know, I've seen people talk about how if we win the Big Ten tournament, then I wouldn't be that upset if we only win one game in the NCAAs. And I said something like, I'm pretty sure you would trade the difference between winning one game in the NCAAs and going to the Sweet 16 with a one and done in the Big Ten tournament, or winning the whole thing. And they're like, no way. That's just one win. No, NCAA tournament's what counts to me. But, you know, nobody ever looks back. You're not like, oh, Michigan State's really good. They won the NCAA. I don't remember when Michigan State has won the Big Ten. I know Maryland hasn't won it because they haven't won it, but you don't remember those things. And then in terms of Van Pelt, I think people took it as maybe a little differently. A lot of people kind of took it to the extreme. Like, he's saying that if you don't say you love Mark Turgeon and he should be extended right now. And, you know, I talked to him about it last night and kind of felt bad that we had amplified the debate. Of course, you know, we got,
I mean, you had to report on that. I mean, it was you can't not do that. Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, he got it. But, you know, the thing is, he's not saying that you have to love Turgeon and this and that. He's just saying, don't be a party pooper during the fun parts. Like, there's, you know, you can obviously, and the jury should still be out with Turgeon until he wins something in the postseason. But when they're playing as well as anybody in the country, you know, stop trying to minimize every single thing or stop trying to bring it into every single conversation. Because otherwise, like he said, what's the point of following it? You know, what's the point of being a fan if during the best times imaginable, some of it close to the best times imaginable, you're still just trying to nitpick? Like, here's, you know, one of the first posts under, you know, I posted a story with Turgeon's comments from after the game where he said it's a great win for our program. One of the first responses is, I hate that beating unranked teams is now considered, quote, a great win for the program. I mean, you know, people are just doing that. And it's against a top 10 KenPom team on the road, a team that you haven't, you know, beaten in six out of the last seven games, and a huge game for the Big Ten standings and all these other angles, but people are still trying to minimize everything because they're just so anti-Turgeon at this point that they see everything through that lens. That's what he's talking about. He's not talking about that you can't, you know, say you'll hold your judgment. He's just saying don't ruin it. Don't ruin the good times, basically.
No, and I agree with that general idea. I would just say, one, it's the internet. I mean, it's the internet. Yeah. I mean, it's most of this is just therapy for people who can't like scream at their 4-year-old while they're watching us go 0 for 3,000 from 3-point land. Like, so you post something stupid on the board to let out some steam. Like, it's just what happens. And he knows that he lives on the internet. Like, he gets that. Two, I think there are exactly like six people who are not enjoying this Maryland run who are Maryland fans.
I don't know. I think there's a lot more. I mean, they're enjoying.
I think there's a lot of whining online because that's what people do. They whine online. I don't think there are a lot of people sitting here praying that we lose out so that Turgeon gets fired. Like, I just don't
think a month ago, there were definitely people hoping that they would lose before things got good.
Now, because it also looked like they might lose out too a month ago.
I know, exactly. And now that they are, I think people are enjoying it, but I still think there's a lot of people who are still trying to, like, every game they'll come up with something about how that was all Cowan, which, you know, clearly at the end last night it was, but right. You know,
it was not an offensive exhibition, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But you know, you gotta give credit where credit's due, right? I mean,
yeah, like give credit, you're gonna
win the game.
If they lose any game, you're going to give him the fault. Clearly.
Exactly.
It's just don't be the party pooper, basically, you know. And then we'll wait till after the season, and then we can and will definitely have the debate. Unless he wins the national championship, and there'll still be some people probably. No, if he wins the national championship, well, yeah, there'll still be
somebody. I don't know. Still be somebody.
There will still be some, but. Other than that, the debate will be had after the season.
Yeah. And last thing I'll say about it in Scott's defense is that, again, we have been on this podcast for what, 5 or 6 years now. We've probably spoken thousands and hundreds of thousands of words to you. And there are a lot of times when I sit back and listen to this a couple days later or whatever, and maybe I said something, I think I listened to it, I'm like, ooh, that was a little harsh. Or, you know, oh, then maybe that wasn't quite the way I wanted to put it. You know, maybe that didn't sound right coming out. I get the feeling that this quote ended up being a little harsher than the tone Scott was probably trying to get across. I think the way you explained it is probably a much better.
Hate is a strong word. Hate is a very strong word.
Hate's a real strong word. It's I'm just saying, as a guy who's been critical of Turgeon quite logically, I think, over the years, it hurt me a little bit, but that's all right. We're going to move past it. We're going to hopefully, God willing, we'll just, I don't know, get to a Final Four, or win a championship, and then we can just not have to do this anymore.
Yeah, he definitely lost some fans among the really, not the U's of the fan base, but the really vocal Turgeon haters. He definitely lost some fans among those people who want to fight for their right to verbally murder Turgeon.
Be miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see what happens. Like I said,
sure, he's crying himself to sleep about that.
I know, he's very concerned. There's, you know, when you watch that that follower number on Twitter subtract by one, I'm sure he's very, very bothered by that. We'll see. I tell you what, though, just looking forward, like, God hope Turgeon just either flames out completely or they win something big, because otherwise it's going to be a mess this offseason, dude. Like,
you don't want to end up in that middle ground.
If he Herb Sendex it, man, we're going to be, it's going to be really ugly, and people are going to be scarred for life by the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their own measuring stick. You know, I think anybody, if he goes to an Elite Eight, that'll be hard to argue against. But if you end up in that, obviously, first round, that's going to be ugly. But then I think the Sweet 16, that's the real kind of lukewarm middle point where you're not going to have any consensus, you know, if you go to the Sweet 16 and then lose in the next round. So,
yeah, I mean, that Sweet 16 is kind of the expected place for a, you know, 2-3 seed to end up. At the minimum, if you don't, you know, that's pretty, got to be pretty disappointing.
If you don't, it is going to be overwhelming. But I'm saying if you lose in the Sweet 16, that's where it's going to be split down the middle, especially because, you know, normally you wouldn't say that, but just because people want to see something bigger after 16 years of not going past that round.
Whew. That number hurts. I know it's there, but it still hurts when you say it. All right, that's enough of basketball. Mainly good news. Hopefully we'll be back.
Hold on. 18 years. 18 years.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I appreciate that. That feels better. There are kids who are being recruited.
For some reason I had an Elite Eight in 2013 in my mind, which was clearly not the case. So, yeah.
So there are...
We forgot about that Turgeon year.
Didn't we all? There are kids at Maryland who are freshmen who have never witnessed Maryland pass Sweet 16. That's great. All right. Enough of that. It was mad enough as it was before. Okay. Let's move to football. Football actually, believe it or not, is in a dead period. And luckily for the coaches, this is one of the two times during the school year that they actually get to go and take vacations. But the recruiting doesn't stop. The movement doesn't stop. Ahmed Ghaffir got the 2020 class signed up and in. Looking at the 2021 class, we were not particularly excited about where this was headed even 2-3 months ago. However, Maryland's been able to pull out a couple of commitments that maybe they didn't expect this early. Just in a broad sense, how do you see how this class is developing, especially given the way that it looked not so long ago from the end of the season on?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, like we kind of talked about, Maryland's done a really good job of trying to get a lot of these kids that they've had the pre-existing relationships with and that they've known, I guess, kind of going into the recruiting cycle a little bit more. I think being able to get those guys in the fold, like, four-star defensive tackle from St. John's, Tazee Johnson, Antoine Littleton, running back also from St. John's, Z'Angelo Shockley from St. Francis. I think getting a lot of these guys that are from Maryland that want to stay close to home, that know the coaching staff really well, that know the families, the coaching staff knows the families very well. I think that being able to get in, I think is critical. Just I would say with this 21 class, a lot of these guys, they had to train with each other when they were younger. A lot of them still, even though they go to different schools, they all train together at the same camps, same trainers. Locally. So a lot of these guys know each other very well. And I guess something that I've just really been very keen to is Coach Loxley and Coach, the rest of the coaching staff, Coach Brooks, Coach Brian Williams, everyone. They're just very aware of it's kind of just all like a big puzzle, essentially, with a lot of these guys. Like Tazee Johnson, you know, he's working on Colby McDonald, Caleb Coombs, but, you know, those guys are also trying to work on Caleb Williams, and some of the recruits are trying to work on Jaleel Farouk. So I think Loxley understands that a lot of these guys that are currently in the class, like Jayon Venerable, for example, was in the ear of Zaki Wheatley every day. And, you know, if Zaki Wheatley was the guy to commit, he would be another. So I think the staff is just doing a really good job just kind of capitalizing on those relationships. And then just kind of going back to just what the previous staff said, the Durkin staff, I remember he he pointed out that he did a really good job of trying to get the players to become recruiters for the staff, for the program as well. And that's something that I've also noticed from Loxley, getting a lot of these local kids that are inside the program and getting Rakeem Jarrett, even though he's not technically in the program, getting him to start working on other guys. I know he's working on Caleb Williams, Gonzaga five-star quarterback, very heavily. So getting these guys that know each other very well, just kind of piecing it all together, I think that's kind of the biggest thing. But it's encouraging to see, you know, Maryland's able to go into St. John, St. Francis, McDonough, Archbishop Spalding. Two commits from St. Francis, two from St. John's. We talked about a lot during the 2020 cycle about how Maryland really struggled to try and get in locally, but as we mentioned, Loxley really understands that the 2021 cycle is a two-year cycle, so taking advantage of that year one foundation into year two of the recruiting period for him, I think has been the biggest surprise so far.
Hey, man, let me cut in real quick. I just happened to be on Twitter earlier and saw Caleb Williams posting new profile pic, and it was him in LSU jerseys. That just typical teenager, you know, playing around, or do you feel like that means anything?
Honestly, Caleb is, he's not a weird guy, but he's just, he's very like tunnel vision. Like he just does things on the fly. I mean, he is the absolute last person that is going to make an emotional decision. Like if there's anyone that you can 110% guarantee that he is checking off every single box, every single aspect of the program, it's Caleb Williams. So like, I know that he likes LSU. I know that they're still after him. I know that there's with the coaching change there, with a potential change in the offensive philosophy, I think. I don't know. I don't really see LSU as a huge favorite now. I'm just intrigued about Oklahoma. I'm also still intrigued about Penn State, just because I know that James Franklin has a very good relationship with him, but I think Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley's pedigree with quarterbacks has definitely caught the eye. There's just not too much familiarity and understanding as to, you know, Oklahoma itself. You know, it's just more so just about the program. It's not, you know, the fit and the details. But Oklahoma did on Friday night offer Jahlil Farouk, Wise four-star wide receiver, and Caleb Williams. We've kind of talked about it a couple times on the board and on the pod, but Caleb Williams and Jahlil Farouk, they have mentioned multiple times that they want to play together. So that could be something to keep an eye on as well.
I've noticed, Ahmed, it does seem that the local kids are way more connected to each other now than they used to be. Does that come from the fact that all of these kind of off-season training programs and stuff, that they all run into each other then, you know, doing 7-on-7 camps and things like that, just in ways that maybe they didn't 5 or 10 years ago? Because it seems like all the local kids know each other now in a way that 5, 10 years ago, you'd get a local kid to commit and they'd be like, oh, well, yeah, I know this dude and I know that dude, but they didn't know any of the other guys. But, you know, now that all these guys train together and they're all on social media together, it almost feels like that could be an advantage to a local commitment run in what Lox is trying to put together in a way that maybe wouldn't have been so easy to do a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of think that, like, you know, players, I think we've definitely seen, like, varying, like, relationships in the recruiting cycle. Like we've seen some years where a lot of these guys, like the 2017 class, like a lot of those guys were very, very close, and that was really led by Kasim Hill. Like Kasim knew everyone because of just kind of growing up, he trained with a lot of these guys, he knew just they played together. I do still kind of think that it's like more so pockets. Like for example, Athletic Republic, that's a place that I've been often. They're led by trainers, Mark McCain, he's Jalen McCain's father, he's a Boston College commit, and Justin Winters, he's the former Maryland assistant, he's now a DB coach at St. Francis. But like whenever I go over there, like Caleb Williams, Jahlil Farouk, like a bunch of guys from Good Counsel, you have a bunch of guys from Flowers, like you still see like a lot of, like, you know, some DC prospects and PG County prospects, you know, they're all very close together. You still see like the Nova guys that are kind of close together. And then like McDonough, Dante Trader, I think he's a little bit different just because he didn't grow up in the area. He transferred into McDonough, but you do still see pockets of it. But yeah, I get the feeling that a lot of these guys are very close. Like John Venerable, for example, I think he's going to end up playing like a huge role for Zaki Wheatley. So I I do think that those relationships and the camaraderie between the prospects does help Maryland. And the fact that Maryland's gotten off to a hot start in the 2021 class gives them a chance. So I think right now Maryland has a chance to kind of capitalize on it. And then from there on, it's just about retaining that talent.
Now, just as a ballpark, you know, I'm sure that you did not expect that Maryland would be putting together a very elite class this time. But given what you've seen so far with the early commits and just the chatter and the buzz, what are your expectations for the 21 class at this point, considering what they were maybe a little while ago?
I would go with a floor of like absolute floor top 25, but like I feel comfortable saying top 20.
And would you expect that to be mainly composed of local kids as opposed to them kind of going out down south like they did in the last class?
Yeah, they don't need to go out too far. I mean, they can to fill out a couple spots and maybe, you know, if one or two kids decommit down the line, I mean, that's just natural. You have attrition in a recruiting cycle, but yeah, I mean, they really don't need to go all that far. I mean, like, you know, I was looking at receiver board. I'm doing like a position by position recruiting board, and I was looking at receivers and, you know, just kind of going over, you know, you have just so many guys that are just local. Braylon Brown was a guy that from Florida, was a four-star receiver. He's another that I thought that Maryland has a pretty good shot at, but, you know, Maryland has, they're in a decent spot with some of their local targets. So I don't think that Maryland will have to go too far to be able to get that. Now, I do think where Maryland will be able to capitalize is like Team Tampa, for example. They're coming up for a visit in March. We talked about it on the board, I believe, 2 weeks ago. Some of those elite guys, you know, they're going to look at Maryland. You know, those guys keep an eye on which teams are recruiting at what level. So some of those guys, when they come on campus and they, you know, first get to meet with those coaching staff, if Maryland's able to build, you know, down the line, maybe Maryland's able to secure, you know, a surprise official visit from an out-of-state elite recruit. I think that's the potential impact down the line.
No, that would certainly be nice, and it kind of remembers me. God, I've been talking too much. It's a Sunday. We don't typically record on Sundays. It reminds me a little bit. This is an old school. This is proving my age. But when Al Groh showed up at Virginia back in the day, and he pulled together Ahmad Brooks and a bunch of these like really highly rated kids his first class, and he proceeded to go like 4-8 the first 2 years, but it didn't matter because the kids saw that he kept bringing in talented, like, you know, top 15 class after top 15 class, and they were willing to overlook the results for a while. It kind of feels like Maryland's going to have to build that kind of recruiting buzz to at least get through these first couple years where the records just aren't going to be pretty.
Yeah. I mean, I think Loxley, he knows, and I think that's maybe this is the only reason why I think Loxley will be able to get this kind of patience. But I think Loxley is pretty transparent about, you know, where their issues are. And he's been transparent about, you know, like offensive line. It's not, you're not going to step into a program that has issues across both offensive and defensive line and be able to fix that in a year. I mean, you're going to be able to in a year bring priority impact defensive end or offensive lineman, but you know, you still need time to develop. I think with the transfer portal, you're able to kind of accelerate that curve and be able to bring in some impact guys. But yeah, I mean, I think Loxley's done a pretty good job of saying like, all right, here's our plan, this is what we're expecting. So I think the transparency might be able to overcompensate for potential negative season this year.
Sounds good. I tell you one thing about Maryland football. The off season is our season.
I said undefeated.
That's right. Can't lose during the off season. All right, boys. Appreciate your time and your efforts tonight. Everybody listening, thanks for listening. Don't forget to give us those 5-star reviews. Share with your friends. And tell everybody about how amazing we are weekly. And we should be back next week. Probably let these two basketball games go and then get back to you early next week. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are all over the Inside Maryland Sports.com message boards. Your IMS Radio. We are out.